Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 363 of the Roguecast, recorded February 15th, 2022.
I'm a Java man.
All right, so we're going to be talking about the Super Bowl, or more to the point, Super Bowl commercials, I guess.
Halftime show was really good.
I heard that. I didn't watch it, but I heard it.
It's worth watching.
Because it had the hippity hop in there. I saw people debating on Facebook. They're like, hey, just so y'all know, this is not a millennial thing. This is actually a Gen X thing. That is our 90s hip hop.
Kaylee called crew. My wife said that basically the football ruined her good concert.
So there's a bunch of stuff to talk about in the trailers. We also have Dave cut up some TV that we've watched. I cut up some TV that Nick watched. And I cut up some TV that Dave watched. So we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff you guys have already heard us talk about, but different people are going to talk about it.
We're going to give a little... this is like follow-ups. This is like you do an article as a follow-up, and you're like, here's the current state of things. In meme format, it would be where it started, where it is now.
Right. It's like a doctor giving you a second opinion.
Yes.
So if you're like...
It's just that if it was my opinion previously, assume the second opinion is wrong.
Yeah.
Unless it agrees with me, which I think at least in one case it does.
Yes. I think if someone was like, I like what Nick had to say about Reacher, but I'm not sure if I could go in for that exam. Let's see what Randy says before I get my Reacher exam. Reacher exam is a bad idea, by the way. I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound good. All right, so store stuff. We have the Power Rangers RPG, which came in.
Yes. The first one.
It looked cool.
Yeah, Hasbro.
From Renegade Press that they're doing. They're also going to do G.I. Joe and Transformers.
Yep. And are these all... I know that they're not necessarily connected, but are they using approximately the same system?
We don't know, but the deck builders are not compatible, so I don't expect the RPGs will be either.
Okay. It's less about compatibility and more like I was kind of curious, like, if you learned the basics of one system, will you kind of be ready for it for the other one?
I don't know.
I bet there'll be some similarities.
Because it's from the same company, right? It'd be weird if they were all completely different systems. Like, this is a D6, this is a D20, and this is a...
But to some extent, it wouldn't, because they're different worlds.
But you want them to cross over.
No, we don't. Dave and I talked about this, and, like, every time they try to cross it over, usually it's bad.
But what if when we do it, it's cool?
I don't want to cross them over, but it is natural for, I think, people to want to take those toy licenses and find some mashup stuff.
Yeah. I think the Power Rangers RPG uses D12s, and the G.I. Joe uses D10s, and the Transformers use only D4s.
Sure.
Yeah.
Nick, you were flipping through it, and you're the only one in this room that has some Power Rangers nostalgia.
That's true.
And you said it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I actually just thought that...
There's Zords and stuff in there.
There are Zords, but I thought... What I was saying, because my love of Power Rangers, I liked the idea behind them. I never liked the execution. The art just looks really good.
The art does look... It's a nice looking
product.
They
paid the right price to use, I think, some of the... who has it? Is it IDW or
Boom.
Is it... No, Boom has it. Yeah, the Boom artwork, so...
Also, I looked through the monster section, and some of the monsters that the Power Rangers fight are bonkers.
Yeah. Oh, completely. I couldn't even name half of them. I know there's a Goldar.
I know that Rita Repulsa has a brother, and his name is, like, Reno Revolto or something.
Sure. There's the Dick Lord Zed, and...
I believe I was talking with Anna, and she's like, why doesn't he have the same last name as Rita Repulsa?
The Repulsa is a long-time honorable family.
Yes.
Why would you not want to be associated with them?
I guess he's like, I'm going to break out on my own as a Revolto. we also got the hardcover for Tal Darai Reborn, which is the Critical Role.
Yep.
Which looks, again, very pretty. Very nice looking hardcover.
Yeah, I think that's going to be big.
We got the Questlings RPG, which is a all-ages RPG.
It's like a smaller thing. Like, it's not like... I don't know what the price is. Indie games can still be kind of pricey.
Yep.
But it's not one of those $50 hardcovers, at the very least.
Right.
This is like a sort of small, approachable something to get your kids into.
And I
know it's kind of geared towards inclusivity, and I think sort of encompassing as to what it can cover. Like, fantasy adventure, but also kind of...
Oh, is that what I thought it was just fantasy? I don't really know.
The way they described it on the back made it sound like it's got a little bit of a slice of life kind of fun. Like not everything is like high quest. Some is sort of day-to-day stuff. Or like, I think it's meant to like, introduce elements that younger kids could actually find that reflect their own lives.
Okay.
And not just be all dragon slaying, although I'm sure there's dragon slaying.
Well, I also saw that the character book you can buy alongside it is So You Want to Be a Paladin, which I think is a great...
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. So yeah, and it's not the same price as sort of like No Thank You Evil, which, although a really great game, it's a bit of a bite as a big box set.
Right, you got to buy in on that one.
So yeah, that's kind of cool. We got Welcome to the Moon, which is a new sort of legacy-style game for people to Welcome to a Perfect Neighborhood, which is a really good big group party game that I like. This is I played this one at BGGCon. Basically, everybody's building their rockets, and the first person to launch the rocket gets points.
Okay.
But then you can play it in different phases. So there's like the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. Oh. You get like sort of different space ages. Like one of them is like building the rockets. Then you're building like your base on the moon and that kind of stuff, and it's a cool idea.
Then you build a neighborhood on the moon.
Then you build a neighborhood on the moon.
That's kind of cool.
That is quite cool.
We also got Star Wars Jabba's Palace, which is a riff on the love letter formula.
Yep. Yeah. Like it literally uses it's a love letter powered by the love letter engine.
Powered
game.
By love letter.
But
yes.
This one has like a unique twist on it, right?
It does, but I don't remember what it is.
No, I don't remember what it is, but it is different from traditional. Let me love slightly letter. Different.
Yeah, and I've heard good things. I've heard it's a fun sort of if you like Star Wars.
Yeah.
If you just came off Book of Boba Fett and you're like, I want to play things in Jabba's palace.
I'm a Jabba man.
I'm a Jabba man.
You're trying to get a letter to Jabba's corpse.
There's not a real rush. Okay, Super Bowl. So we had trailers. Lots of them. So we're going to talk about the trailers.
Yep.
One of these, I'm not sure if it was a Super Bowl trailer or if we just saw it, but the Firestarter trailer from Blumhouse.
Right. This is a remake, reinvention, whatever, of the Stephen King adaptation.
Yep.
That was one of the earliest Drew Barrymore movies. I think it was maybe right after E.T. Or right before? But right after. It was like 84 and E.T. was like 82 or something like that. I don't know. It was 83 and E.T. was 82. Or was it 81? Anyway.
I was just going to wait and see how long you were going to go trying to figure this out.
I can go for ages. Anyway, it didn't look any good to me.
I kind of agree. I
the dialogue was very prosaic. Like, it felt like it was kind of like stock dialogue. Like, the power's building in her, you know, and something's got to be done now. They're coming, and we can't stay longer.
I think what they're counting on is that the special effects have gotten better since they made the original. Some cool like steam fire effects, but it's like I'm not sold on this. Basically, and it's a 3-minute trailer. It's not like we got a little flash. It's like they gave us a pretty good sense what it's going to be about.
You know, what's weird, Nick. I haven't read it in many years.
No, I haven't either.
But I remember it being a good book, and like it was generally. I guess, spoiler warning, the mom gets killed, and the dad is on the run with the girl, and being pursued by sort of government forces and stuff like that.
In this movie, the father is Zac Efron.
Zac Efron, yep.
What I remember is there's a lot of good writing from King with the two of them together. Sometimes, you know, he's off doing something and she's left on her own for a time, and he has a really good way of getting into, like, kind of kids' sensibilities in their heads and making it very suspenseful.
Yeah.
And I really think, like, the dialogue and stuff, like, in this actually could shine. Like, you should be, like, really into these characters. I think by playing up just the suspense stuff, I almost would have played it more like drama with suspense than suspense and special effects movie.
I mean, this could also just be a really poorly done trailer trying to kind of catch people's eyes.
Right?
The writer on this did Rectify, which is a very boring but solid...
wasn't it Showtime?
Prestige TV, it's on AMC.
AMC, that's right.
Or, no, it was like Sundance.
Sundance, okay.
And then he did Narcos Mexico, he did an episode of that.
Okay.
The movie most notably he's written is Halloween Kills.
Well, people didn't love that. I liked Halloween Kills.
Yeah, I did too.
All right, so, but... and then the director has only done he's done a short and a music video and an episode of the show called Cabinet of Curiosities. So
it felt like a music video
director.
It felt like a music video director to me.
The creative team on this is not super strong, I guess is what I would say. But they say that the producer was, they say from the producer of Invisible Man, which Invisible Man is a great remake.
If they could pull that off.
However, the thing is the producer on that was what, Leigh-1L? And he's not the producer who's named here. So
Nick, am I correct that the idea is that the girl who was like the Drew Barrymore character was kind of the product of them having partaken in like in the '60s when the parents were in college in like an MK Ultra type experiments where they did, like, LSD. But, like, I remember this really horrific scene where, like, he half forgets it, but, like, he wakes up in the middle of it, and, like, someone's gouged their own eyes out, and everybody's freaking out in the room.
It was dark.
There was some cool and freaky stuff in it, and, I like, none of what I liked about it was shown in there.
Well, from the writer of Halloween Kills, that person's not shy away from, like, gore, so honestly, I don't think you can show an eye-gouging scene in a trailer.
No, but what I needed to see was the MK Ultra thing, like, was a neat thing, like, the parents that met up and was like, hey, you know what, let's do this crazy thing, let's do this experiment together, and then it turns out so horrific. That was, like, you could hint at that, you could show that, anyway.
You could show, like, the person hunting them, and that's kind of in the same ballpark as what the original movie in the show, or the book was.
I actually don't remember the original movie particularly well. I think, it was okay.
Yeah, it was just okay.
The main dude who was tracking them was a Native American guy who was kind of one of those, I'm going to say, very writerly characters. He kind of felt like a weird invention, but was a unique villain. He's this ultra smart, like, sort of profiler, kind of black ops dude who's like you know what he reminded me of, the characterization of him in Firefly, in Serenity, what is it, an operative or whatever? He had his own weird sort of, like, code. I mean, I think he was actually a little crueler than that guy. But he was in that ballpark as far as, like, this guy is super smart, almost unstoppable, and a fascinating character study in and of himself. I needed to see something of him on this, or I would have liked to.
This trailer doesn't catch my eye, but it also says that it's going to be playing on Peacock day and date.
You're going to press play.
Yeah, I'm going to press play, because I like Stephen King. Well, I used to read every Stephen King novel that came out.
Yeah, but then there was 500
like,
of them.
And then he was like, I'm retiring. And then he's like, no, I'm not retiring, I'm releasing 20 books. And I was like, okay, I'm done, I'm sorry.
I guess, Nick, if you watch this and you're like, it's super good, you guys should watch it, I might watch it.
That's where I gotta... that's where I gotta
that's
be.
That's fine.
On the other hand, I think we're all very excited for Nope.
Yes. You could tell me that Jordan Peele is making a movie about...
The phone book?
The phone book, wall painting, and I'd watch it.
I won't go that far because I feel like he's going to stumble at some point. But both Us and Get Out are hugely watchable horror movies.
Yep.
And the trailer for this one looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's it has all the things that Dave likes in it, which is wide Midwestern plains, hints of UFO weirdness. It's like obviously progressive storyline. Like, there's just all kinds of interesting stuff going on.
I love the fact that they do the head-on shots of people reacting to something obviously ominous.
Yeah.
And it's like every single character, like Daniel Kaluuya, the main female lead.
Yeah.
I love that because it feels very retro in sort of.
It's actually Kubrickian. It's like The Shining
or like classic horror, like.
Yeah.
House on the Haunted Hill.
Well, unless I was missing anything because the sun was glaring, you yourself don't get to see much of what they see.
There's an alien fist at one point.
There's like some lights, and then there's like
weird cloud formations and lights and stuff, yeah. So, but yes, this looks to me like there's a sort of a black owned ranch, is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ranch, kind of like the Spawn Ranch in Hollywood. What's for them in Hollywood?
And, something weird happens there.
Looked like aliens to me.
It looked like aliens. I feel like it is, but knowing that Jordan Peele likes to subvert, I noticed that even the way they did the title is like
upside down.
They inverted the title so that it descended from above.
Yep.
And I was like, is that like a UFO coming from above? Or is that to tell us that things are going to... This is a movie about inversion.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because he loves thematic stuff like that. Yeah. In fact, a lot of those things in there, people are probably already hyper-analyzing, like, is this a symbol? Does this mean something?
Yep.
I'm going to go ahead and like probably stop watching the trailers at this point. Yep. I was on board from the movie poster release.
I was going to watch this trailer
weeks ago or months ago.
I heard there wasn't anything in it. So
like,
do you think we're ever going to reach a point where a movie doesn't release a trailer?
No, but we should. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
It would be very cool.
I mean, it's sort of the same way. Like, this is a weird example, but Robert Kirkman launched a comic and it just showed up one week and we hadn't ordered it. It was given to us in the numbers that we were, like, the first issue was
except for shipping. What's the name of that comic? What's about?
I don't know what it's
Die Die Die.
Oh, and okay. I take back my point.
I thought it was his other one where they went to like their that weird dimension. You know, the one that's like the dimension that overlays ours. And
that's
it's
Oblivion
like
Song.
Oblivion Song.
No, it wasn't that one. That one we ordered. Yeah.
But anyway, like, you know, experiment. The first person to try it isn't necessarily going to have a mega success.
Yeah.
But he had the clout to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know that, I don't actually have a particular issue with trailers, it's like just reading the dust jacket of a book or something like right. that.
Well, everybody was so hyped for Spider-Man, and people were like, where's our Spider-Man trailer?
Yeah.
And so I feel like the movie that could release without a trailer would be something like the next Avengers or Spider-Man, but it's also one that people desperately want the trailers for.
Yeah.
And people might be pissed they didn't get a trailer, so...
But right. I also feel like Jordan Peele has the clout and yeah. kind of the mysteriousness.
But like, this was, like, a pretty good way to, like, make me hyped for it without knowing too much.
Oh, yeah, no, he...
So, it reminds me of the early Shyamalan trailers where they would just show an extended
yes.
scene from yeah. it, like The Sixth Sense or
this
whatever.
This trailer makes me feel like he had a hand in making the trailer. Because a lot of people just, like, outsource that and,
yeah.
and they'll just put in whatever. This one feels... purposeful.
I think that's the thing. I think the filmmakers need more control than the marketing people, because the marketing
yeah.
people don't give a crap about story.
It's true.
They just want to get butts in seats.
Yeah.
And so you want someone there who, like, no, we can't put that in the trailer. Yes, it's a cool moment, and they'll get people to watch it, but it ruins the movie.
Right.
And I think that, unfortunately, nobody has the clout to do that. But we'll see.
No, obviously Jordan Peele does.
I am ready for Jordan Peele's Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which may or may not really be at all like that.
Yeah.
yeah
down
I'm,
for
I'm
it.
Psyched for
it
this.
Could be a kaiju movie, and that's what's coming out of there. It could be, like, I have no, like...
No,
when we went to see Us, I guess we did know that there was a weird doppelganger family.
Yeah, that was
we
knew.
We didn't have a sense that it was part of this sort of, like, mass sort of movement, that it was, like... related to this, like, you know, there was literally a Hands Across America.
There's always twists and turns that are bigger than... The story's always bigger than the trailer promises.
Yep.
I think. And then I think that's...
When is that coming out?
It's in
July.
July, yes.
Okay, that's too far out, but okay.
we got the trailer for Jurassic World Dominion, which I know y'all are super excited for.
And I squeed.
I will say, this is a really good trailer for a movie I don't have a whole lot of interest in.
You know, I think the aside from being a well-cut trailer, I think the music did some good heavy lifting of
yeah,
making
yeah.
it feel momentous.
Yeah.
It had
well,
the vibe of, like, when you, like, kind of like this, some of the good trailers for the last few Star Wars movies,
mm-hmm.
When they're playing off your emotional response to the
yep.
originals, and you can get a sense of, like, oh my god, it's all coming home.
Yeah,
yeah.
It opens with this wide shot of, like, Oklahoma plains... and
icy and snowy
and dinosaur ranching.
Well, and it and the few first words are Richard Attenborough recounting.
It's the serious scene where he's telling Ellie Sattler. He's talking about his dream of what Jurassic Park could
yeah,
be.
Yeah, when they're sitting there eating ice cream.
Yep, but it's a great little sort of monologue from him where he talks about wanting to give people something real and not the little fake flea circus thing that he
yeah.
grew up with. And
now we have dinosaurs in the world. Like,
yeah. You see a brachiosaur. What do you call those ones?
Brachiosaur.
Well, what do they call? What
they
used to be a brontosaurus, a
patasaurus,
or at least something like that.
Is that Judd Apatow's dinosaur?
Yes, it is. Judd Apatosaurus.
Judd Apatosaurus.
Yeah, we see what Triceratops, Velociraptors.
They do not shirk on the dinosaurs in this
no,
trailer.
Lots of dinosaurs.
There's lots of there's.
There are going to be dinosaurs in your dinosaur trailer.
Tons of raptors. Triceratops, like, headbutts a Jeep or
a yeah,
car
a
or something.
Yeah, group of them fighting. Triceratops versus cars, which is
it looked like a T-Rex.
A motorcycle chase through. To me, that looked like it was, like, Rome
like
or something.
It looks like
yeah.
Rome, yeah.
Through Rome with raptors running around on rooftops after him. And I'm like, I don't know quite how they get to that place, but it looked neat.
Yep.
And then, of course, the thing people are making fun of Sam Neill coming into the tent or vice versa, and them saying their full names.
You know, I've seen people make fun of that, and I'm like, people do that. Like, if you haven't seen somebody in a long time, you're doing this sort of fake,
but it,
the fake formality. I've done that with people.
I've done that with people.
They've shown that they've been continued to be friends in other movies, so it feels a little strange.
But that was like 20 years ago.
I think you can allow that they may have lost touch a few years.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I have to say that feels like a petty one.
Yeah, it does. I've done that with friends I see every day. It's a little thing you do with friends sometimes. Yeah. You know?
That being said,
the people making the complaints don't have friends, Randy.
I love Sam Neill. I think he's such a charismatic actor.
Yeah, I felt like a touch of his Irish accent was coming out in there.
A little bit.
Who's the woman? Laura Dern?
Yeah. Laura Dern is amazing.
They're both fantastic.
Jeff Goldblum, it looks like he's not just going to be behind a desk anymore. Yep. He's definitely going to maybe have a confrontation with a T-Rex, which I'm excited for.
But he does get to do the... He gets to be the kind of guy who's doing the prophetic type of...
Oh, yeah.
He's basically served the role of the mad prophet... In the last several.
So here's my thing, guys. They have cloning technology.
Yep.
Why don't we have Nedry back?
we did get a Dilophosaurus back, which we have not seen since the original one.
I'm just saying, everybody's so obsessed with the people saying full names. They're not talking about the real issues, which is, where's my Dennis Nedry clone?
Gotta go.
My only thing is...
By the way, is the little girl that they're raising, little clone girl?
Yeah, it's the clone girl.
Yeah. Everybody needs to see the last movie.
And apparently Blue has a little baby raptor.
Baby raptor.
Oh, we didn't even mention the feathered raptor.
Yeah.
I got chills cool watching looking. That. That looked cool.
Also, I don't know what the story is, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I don't know either.
This, you guys, how you guys feel about this is how I feel about most of the Marvel trailers that we see. And it's fun to watch it from the outside, because I don't care at all about Jurassic Park.
You're like, these people are maniacs.
And I love that Bryce Dallas Howard is back. I actually like all
that. Randy, you should try Camp Cretaceous.
I don't think I should.
I actually think you should. Although I came around and liked Prodigy, I think Camp Cretaceous is better than Star Trek Prodigy.
I have more investment in Star Trek than I do in dinosaurs.
You should give it a shot.
Dinosaurs are going to come back and kill us all, I'm sure.
No, for whatever reason, I was never a dinosaur kid. I'm a spaceship kid.
Oh, man, I was a dinosaur kid.
A little dum-dum.
But you were more of an alien. Names are hard to pronounce. You were more of an alien kid than you were a dinosaur kid.
I divided my time. I was equal opportunity. I liked aliens. I liked robots and spaceships.
Dave multiclassed.
I liked fantasy stuff. Yeah,
I mean, I multiclassed, but dinosaurs were pretty.
I liked.
I was a bard who focused. I had the sort of jack of all trades thing.
I was an '80s kid, so I like dumb military adventure. propaganda.
I like all that too.
I do too.
And
you multiclassed. You just have.
But I didn't take any levels in dinosaur. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You multiclass, you just multiclass wrong.
There weren't any dinosaur movies really per se in the 80s.
I had a ton of dinosaur books.
But yeah, like I was like all about like some little dinosaur toys.
Yeah.
I guess I liked sort of like when things like that would show up in Ray Harryhausen movies. But I'm trying to think of like...
But I think it's also like, I'm not a big kaiju fan. And I think it's the same kind of thing. It's like, I guess things being big doesn't do it for me. Except this week in G.I. Joe, which we will talk about.
But yeah, I think that may have actually, except for Nope, that's my favorite trailer.
Yeah.
My favorite trailer, of course, predictably, was the Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness.
That's a good trailer.
Are we moving on to that?
Yeah, let's move on.
Tell us about it.
So, there's all... People have done all the Zapruder film examination of it.
It is one of those that's... We already know... When you have the multiverse, it's going to be jam-packed with Easter eggs.
Well, it definitely
and people have
has,
already started looking for all the Easter eggs in the trailers.
It definitely has either the Human Torch or Superior Iron Man or something else entirely.
Or possibly Monica Rambeau.
Monica Rambeau. It also definitely has Professor X or possibly Patrick Stewart playing somebody else.
Yep.
It also definitely has evil Doctor Strange or possibly not the evil Doctor Strange. Basically, everybody's so sure about what it is that we don't know anything.
So just a real quick say... The trailer shows Doctor Strange talking about having some sort of nightmarish dreams, which leads us to think possibly the longtime Doctor Strange foe Nightmare.
I'm pretty sure about
it. It'd be weird to say the word Nightmare even in the trailer and not have it be Nightmare.
But we also see Shuma Gorath.
And we see that there seems like there's some sort of multiverses like buckling through into ours or whatever, and that he's talking to Wanda, aka Scarlet Witch, about this. And she rightly notes that she tends to get vilified for her breaking the rules, and he's sort of seen as the hero.
Well,
but it's interesting, I think she looks like... It looks like the two of them are going to form sort of a partnership here, which is
interesting. I think
so. But also, America Chavez is in here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
America Chavez is famously from another dimension.
She can punch her way into other dimensions,
too. Oh, okay. So that's probably how she winds up here, and that's...
Assuming they follow that exact thing, they may...
Tell me if I'm wrong here, though. the imagery of like the universe dying, which kind of is like smoking and crumbling. Yeah. That was used in What If in that very episode,
similar,
right?
Very similar look. They that the Doctor Strange, the sinister Doctor Strange they show, who then also has like tentacles and all that. That is very much like the What If Doctor Strange, but I don't know for sure that that is that Doctor Strange.
It, Randy, are you going to watch any? Sorry, what were you saying, Nick?
No, we see multiple versions of Doctor Strange in this trailer.
Randy, are you going to watch any subsequent trailers?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
we're Marvel. We are.
I've given up on trying to avoid the Marvel trailers.
Dave, we are weak.
And so I will definitely watch them. I was hoping this was going to be out in February or March, like originally was planned, but instead it's going to be in May.
I'm going to try to avoid them. Where I break on that stuff is when I'm at the theaters. Yeah. And I haven't been at the theaters much in the last few months because of Omicron stuff. Now that I've had COVID and I have superpowers,
right.
I should be able to avoid it. No, I think I'm actually probably closing in on like my period of being effectively immune to it.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I'm going to be going to the theaters much. But if I do and they show it, then I'm going to not be able to resist it.
Yeah. We're all going to have to start going to theaters again for these movies. Like Nope, Jurassic World, Doctor Strange.
I have to admit, those are all ones I want to see there.
Yeah. We're all going to risk death for that.
Do you think that is Patrick Stewart playing Xavier? Or
I don't know.
I feel sure it's Xavier, but it could be like some alternate universe version.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be alternate universe.
Yeah, Xavier, I think it's alternate universe.
He does seem to be rolling into frame when you do see it. It does look like that movie.
And it definitely looks like there are other people on that platform.
So people are speculating it's the version of the Illuminati.
I hate the Illuminati.
I do too.
The MCU version of the Illuminati, I could be okay with.
If they decide to do a multiversal Illuminati where it's like different people the Watcher has recruited to sort of like help, it's like, you know, guide reality from being destroyed. If the Illuminati is basically not to like do whatever, I don't know what the Illuminati did in the
They did weird they were things.
They shot, they manipulated events.
They shot like Hulk into space.
Like, they mind wiped Steve Rogers. Yeah.
If instead the Illuminati is there to prevent the destruction of the multiverse, I'm okay with them being there for that.
Yeah.
Well, Randy, let me ask. Would you be okay with them being the villains if the Watcher or whoever had gathered sort of people who were the manipulative alternate world versions of these characters, and they were all evil sort of, at the very least, manipulative versions of them?
I don't really want that either.
Okay, I just wondered if you would be okay with them if they went ahead and just kind of straight up cast them as villains, didn't try and pretend that they were also noble.
No, I don't like that idea either.
Okay.
I did think that Chitawal Ejiofor's new look for Baron Mordo was awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And we get a glimpse of, was it Rentra?
Rentra, the Minotaur apprentice of Doctor Strange.
Yep. I was, at first I ran, Nick, I thought because I saw Wanda, I was like, is Bova in this?
Yeah.
No, but it's Rentra.
Bova being one of those deep cut origins of Wanda and a bunch of other characters.
My one theory is if they, depending on how deeply integrated this is with everything, because like, everyone's like, all the stuff he's talking about, like, I did all this stuff. He's referring to the Spider-Man stuff and all that kind of thing.
Or there could be more.
I think it's possible that they're going to go more directly into Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
And that this may have less to do with what Wanda did and what Loki did and what Spider-Man did. That's all cracks. But what if the foundation of cracks started with him doing the time loop for Dormammu? If that's the thing, he's like, hey, I did what I had to do to save the world.
Yeah.
He could be like, that could have been
I kinda like what that.
Caused the crack. Because that was the time stone.
Yeah. That was the first crack.
That could have been the first crack.
Yeah.
And that could be... And how they tie more directly into the Doctor Strange movie.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty clever that they use those, they can create this sandbox where there's neat possibilities like that, but it's kind of unpredictable enough that it's like, well, it's not 100% obvious, and they can still surprise us. I think almost everybody was surprised by a fair amount of what happened in Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah.
Well, if their Illuminati is alternate versions of different characters...
I'm fine with that.
Then they have a new... They have to have a different Iron Man, but like... They could bring in the Ancient One again.
But like,
they could have an alternate world with and then.
Do you think what's his name Robert Downey would play?
No, I don't. I think they'd cast a new person.
Why wouldn't they if it was an alternate world?
Because Robert Downey Jr. is not coming back to do that role.
Ever?
I don't think so. But
he's done
for a one-off movie where he got to play a villainous version of him.
He's done.
I mean, it wouldn't be like crazy. It would be like one day or. You know.
I don't think he will. But we'll see. Wrong.
But if they do like an evil version of Black Bolt or.
The thing is, I think Dave and I talked about this off mic a little bit. I think he was mentioning to you that I don't necessarily want them to be introduced as the evil version of themselves before we've seen them in the MCU. Like, I don't really love the idea of Professor X being there before we actually get the mutants in the MCU. Right. But at the same time, like, Spider-Man showed that they can make it work, and so I have a certain amount of faith in it.
What was the last movie that Sam Raimi did?
Drag Me to Hell? Maybe?
Really? For sure. No, he's made some of those like fairy tale movies, like the Wizard of Oz movie. Whatever it was called.
What was the last good movie he made?
I was trying to remember that.
Like, it might have been Drag Me to Hell.
Do we have, like, faith in that? Because this definitely feels up his alley, kind of that dark does. End.
I'm a little worried about it, to be honest. Because Sam Raimi, much as I like him, I don't know if he's the guy to...
It still looked pretty Marvel-y in the ads.
It did.
That said, I think I have the least interest in this trailer of the people in this room. I thought it was a okay trailer, but because I wasn't quite sure what was going on, and I'm not a, like, not super into all the Easter eggs or whatever... or, like, that's not a point of intrigue for me. I thought it was just an okay trailer of Doctor Strange and, like, a world that looks weird and stuff.
So his last big movie was Drag Me to Hell, and then he did Oz the Great and Powerful in 2013.
Wow.
So it's been a while.
That is a long time
that's a long
to
time.
Be...
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Maybe he is due one, then, because...
I hope.
Generally speaking, as directors get older, they don't start getting better.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. I mean, for me, the Marvel... The producers and the crew running Marvel is more important than the director. And so I have a feeling that he may be of shepherding it, but I think that probably Feige and those guys were instrumental in what happens. Especially this one that seems to be a big universe moving pieces thing,
yeah.
Where maybe they brought someone in who was like, we know this guy can direct, we also know that he doesn't have the clout he used to, so he's going to do what we say.
Randy, you're so manipulative about these, so cynical.
I am.
I would say, looking at like kind of how he did the Spider-Man movies back in the early 2000s, his basic directing chops are all solid. He didn't actually do all these crazy Raimi shots in there, just on occasion.
No.
Yeah, a few scenes. And like he can stage a scene, he can get an emotion.
I was also happy to see Rachel McAdams back.
Yeah.
I like her a lot.
I like her.
Is Rachel McAdams the what would have been a romantic person, but they
it
didn't
It looks like
really
she's getting married to somebody else, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't look... I don't care whether she's back or not.
I say Clea or nothing.
Yeah.
Well, Clea's supposed to be in this.
Yeah, we'll see.
I think this movie has a ton of moving parts.
Yeah, well, that's
my...
Like, this is a trailer.
That's
we don't
dangerous,
really know
actually.
It's very dangerous.
We don't know what the movie's about.
Right.
But I have a feeling, like Spider-Man, I feel like they're not going to show us what the movie's actually about.
Yeah. That worked very, very well for Spider-Man.
I agree.
All right, then we have the DC trailer, which is four different DC movies.
Yep, right. It was
snippets.
More of those four teasers in a way.
Yeah.
Not even teasers.
You remember how the Netflix we had that we were like, talking directly to the audience?
Yeah,
this does something similar. Everything they have, all the dialogue is basically the "Are you in?" kind of stuff. Like it is very much the like come watch these DC movies.
I was deeply amused the fact that they were trying to be like, we want to be a hero, and like very upbeat, and then they switch to Batman, and he's like, we have to be a hero. And you know that is going to be like the darkest.
That's not going to be the tone of the
dark. No.
Did you notice on just a purely sort of filmmaking level that when they're like, you know, somebody's like, you know, what could be better than a leader, and they're like, a hero. And then when the word hero goes, it says like DC, the logo flashes behind it, so it looks like DC hero.
Yeah.
It's just interesting how they try to brand every stuff.
I will say the look at the JSA, they look badass.
This is for Black Adam's movie.
For Black Adam.
I mean, the shot of Aldous Hodge as Hawkman looks great. Pierce Brosnan and Dr. Fate. Yeah.
Yep.
And then we get
whoever
a snippet
Adam
of Adam
Smasher
is.
Yeah. Fully gianted up.
And a snippet of Cyclone.
That's who that was.
Yeah. Okay. And let's see. There's glimpses of Aquaman. What's that called?
Aquaman and the Lost World or something.
Yeah. That one shows the least. You see him in like the dark suit, which is I think going to end up being their variant of the stealth suit.
I think they're going to do kind of like an active camouflage, kind of to do the blue in there too.
Yeah, I'm sure the special effects guys they should come up with something really cool looking for it.
And then they show him on the throne in like the classic like bright orange and green costume.
What else? There's stuff from Batman in there.
Batman, Flash, Black Adam,
and Flash. Yeah. I thought it was, like, pretty solidly energetic, but there weren't a lot of, like, notable scenes in it. The JSA stuff from Black Adam was definitely the highlight.
That's the highlight.
I'm just saying, whatever story that, what's his name, and Grant Morrison concocted must have won him over.
out for Flash.
For Flash, apparently. Ezra Miller, yeah. So...
I'm surprised that they're not calling it Flashpoint. I thought it was going to be used to realign stuff, but yeah. Apparently there's no Flashpoint.
What's weird is, like, that's a fairly successful comic branding thing. Like, I think fans were down with it. Like, yeah. I don't know why they wouldn't do it.
They're also not highlighting the multiverse stuff, because we know that, like, Keaton's going to be I'm not surprised we didn't see Keaton's Batman
just
or...
his voice.
Any sense of
did you hear his voice?
Yeah, yeah. Over the Flash part, you can hear Michael Keaton talking to Ezra Miller.
I'm surprised that they didn't do the thing that Spider-Man and Doctor Strange both did, which is to tease the multiverse a little bit more.
Well, yeah, at the end of the Flash, you see like four different Flashes.
Were any of those like notable people we know? For a minute, I was like, wait, is one of those the guy from the '90s TV show, and one's the TV show Flash?
Well, CW? It looked like a copy, like two Ezra Millers, and then there was a female Flash. And
that unfortunately doesn't have like an immediate punch of like or like a it's him and him and him.
Yeah, I think they don't quite either. They don't quite get it, or they didn't put it in the trailer.
I do think that probably we are going to get a big trailer that hints at the stuff and is like has Easter eggs, things like that. I don't love the idea of the trailer for all of them that doesn't really show you much of anything.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
That said, I think we talked about this, Nick. I think you and I are somewhat in agreement. The only one that we're not particularly interested in is probably the one that'll make the most money, the Batman one.
Right.
Yeah.
Just done with kind of Batman as on film for now.
The only one I want to see is Black Adam, and only because of the JSA stuff.
Yeah, the JSA stuff is definitely...
Yeah, I'm down for all the others. Yeah. Flash, Aquaman for sure.
I like Ezra Miller. I try to forget that he was in that one movie. You have to talk about Kevin.
He was good.
He was very good.
Exceedingly disturbing. Yes. One of the most disturbing performances I've ever seen.
And then there was one more trailer, right?
No. That's all the trailer.
Lord of the Rings?
Oh, did I miss? I missed Lord of the Rings. Yes.
Look at this. Randy's just going to bypass the most expensive television show ever made.
Well, weirdly, there's actually not a lot to say about it.
But it's our first look at it.
Yeah, so what we're seeing is, I think, the second age in Lord of the Rings. So hundreds of years before the events of the movie. And by the way, from what I've heard, there is no formal connection between these films and the Peter Jackson films. Obviously, both inspired by the same source material, but they're not like this must build up to the exact movies that we've seen.
I've read the Lord of the Rings trilogy and The Hobbit, of course, but Second Age, does that mean like high magic and that all the elves are still there?
Yes, for sure. All those things are true. Sort of generally more magic in the world and sort of more powerful magic. I think the people like the Aragorn's people, the Dunedain, I think are all like broadly at this like higher level, like almost superhero-y level. There's a thing in like the first age where humans could fight Balrogs. And there was like Balrog lords and multiple Balrogs roaming around and stuff like that. The Ungoliant, the giant spider that would later spawn Shelob, and stuff like that. And I think they are like doing some time compression, things like that. They're going to like, but we're going to see like Elrond, and I think that was Galadriel in some of those scenes. Might have been her climbing on the wall.
We get our first glimpse of like some of the characters, and I don't know who the guy with the bow was, but he was badass.
He was an elf, right? He had ears. He had elf ears.
I was like, is this our stand-in for Legolas?
That's our Legolas.
I mean, they were for sure, like, one of the most mind-blowing things that Legolas did in that first movie was we had never seen anybody in a fantasy movie that was, like, a magical, almost archer like that.
I think it looks pretty and...
I'm more interested than I thought I would be.
It was an atmosphere trailer, and also I think showcasing the set design, the cast. Specifically, it's a diverse cast. Yes, there's black people in Middle Earth now, and I think it looks really good.
Yeah.
There's a only briefly glimpsed here, but there's some nice photos coming around out in magazines showing like dwarves and stuff like that, and there was something in here that was like a troll, but I don't know if it was. I think at least in Tolkien that there are like cave trolls, mountain trolls, and just your garden variety trolls, and I'm sure there could be different ones in beneath, probably some of them, whether they're corrupted by Sauron or whatever. I think we are going to see Sauron when he had a human form in this, and maybe even before his like full fall, so that he might be a person who like people trust at the time, or ambitious but trusted. maybe. Nothing I've seen in the trailer show him, but I think that's one of the elements of it.
I was looking at the cast list, and it's like, I know some of them from, like, bit roles in movies and TV shows, but this is an interesting cast. It'll be kind of cool not to say no names, because that sounds mean, but
they
kind of relatively,
no names.
Relatively unknown.
They are not stars.
Correct.
Yeah, I liked this teaser. You know, I'll want to see some scenes before too long, but you know,
I guess the woman who's playing Galadriel was the girl in Crawl.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
That's awesome.
Okay, so she has skills fighting gators.
Yes,
now she's gonna fight orcs. non-trailer news. This is just kind of funny. The Kraven the Hunter movie, which is another one of these movies, I don't think is gonna happen. They've cast Aaron Taylor Johnson as their Kraven.
Yeah.
And Russell Crowe's been cast as something, maybe his dad.
I like that you think
Papa
these
Kraven
aren't going to happen.
They're not going to happen.
I think they're going to happen.
We'll see.
You know what else Randy didn't think was going to happen? Daredevil.
He's true.
He also was done with Star Wars.
That's different. I'm not saying that if they make this Kraven movie, I won't see it, because I probably will.
Yes.
Why would you see a Kraven movie?
What?
Do you like Kraven that much?
No, I just like, I can see it being a good movie.
Oh, but you're not going to see the Morbius movie.
Definitely not going to see the Morbius movie.
I'm going to see the Morbius movie. I actually weirdly like Jared Leto. I don't know why.
I don't know. Maybe like psychopaths.
He's very. I watched him in House of Gucci, and he was kind of amazing.
What was I going to say? Is like, I haven't seen him in much, so I don't have a lot to comment on. But like, what was the movie Requiem for a Dream he was in, and he was good. And then I thought he was good in as that serial killer dude
and the
in
Little Things.
Little Things, yeah, even though the movie itself was just okay.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Kraven the Hunter, I believe, is going to go the same route that Sinister Six did, which is not happening. But we'll see. I want them to make the Black Cat Silver Sable movie.
I know.
That's not going to happen. These movies are going
to
happen.
Who do you get Russell Crowe to play? I mean, I don't even...
It doesn't matter, because he's not going to be in the movie. He's like, I'll take a paycheck to be attached to it.
He was Jor-El.
Kraven's father doesn't have to be, like, is not a particular known entity or whatever.
Yeah, so they could just make a thing, yeah.
Well, they could just make up a thing.
Well, they have the whole Kravenoff lineage, the family from, was it, it wasn't Spencer's, was it? It was...
Oh, I don't remember.
It was Slott, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. He's going to play superhero and supervillain dads now. We got they're doing a Futurama revival at Hulu, which is interesting because the first reaction I saw from people were like, woohoo! And then very quickly I saw people were like, but wait, this had a perfect ending. I don't know if I want them to do more. And also, John DiMaggio, who voices Bender, is very vocal about, hey, they didn't talk to me at all about this.
Yeah.
And people are like, look, if you don't get him, we're not going to watch it.
He is the heart and soul of that show.
They could really screw this up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure if you'll want more Futurama.
Well, the initial enthusiasm tells me that they're open to it.
Yeah.
I was only a dabbler in things Futurama.
Same.
Rama-y. And I'm neither here nor there.
You were Simpsonites.
Yeah, we were Simpsonites. Yeah.
I was a Futurama.
Have you seen every episode, Nick?
A Futurama?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
What is your take on this?
I mean, if they make more, great. I hadn't heard the whole Joe DiMaggio thing. That's a little sad.
John DiMaggio. Joe DiMaggio definitely isn't.
Yeah, Joe DiMaggio is definitely not going to be in it. John DiMaggio.
Where have you gone? With the technology,
Joe DiMaggio.
Long before Joe DiMaggio could play Bender.
Sure. That kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And if you don't talk to like Katie Siegel or
I think Katie Siegel might be involved. I don't remember, but I feel like they're probably. I think this is the actors squeezing them for a little money. Like, I'm sure that they're gonna do it, and they should.
Good. Get them.
Yeah.
Get your money.
Yep. I can't imagine them actually making it and recasting when John DiMaggio is alive and working. That they would be like, we brought somebody else to play Bender. Nobody will notice. People will notice.
And they'll kill that Bender and replace him with a real Bender.
True. We got a premiere date for Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is going to premiere on May 25th.
Okay. I am excited.
I'm looking forward to it. I don't know.
I like Ewan McGregor. I like him as Obi-Wan.
I do, too. I just don't need more further adventures of Obi-Wan.
Or further Tatooine adventures.
Or more Tatooine, yeah.
I was left with a bit of a sour taste in my mouth by the finale of Boba Fett.
Same.
Which retroactively made me even a little less enthused for Mandalorian. I'm not saying that they can't win me back over, but like right now I'm at a bit of an ebb, and so
Done with Star Wars?
I'm not going to do that. I'm very nobly not going to do that.
I've heard some other casting stuff for Obi-Wan, and I am excited to see.
I'm hoping we'll see Cad Bane again.
But I actually do remember before Mandalorian came out, or actually maybe when I had only watched a few minutes of it, I was like, or like 20 minutes, and I was like, it's good, but I think I might be done with Star Wars. So I have had my done with Star Wars moment too. Yeah.
People freaking out that Cad Bane's dead. I'm like, well, one, we could see him.
Oh, I think he's
in
dead.
The timeline.
But
however,
but all the different time periods that you can show him whenever you can do.
He's not dead.
They do linger on him, and there is a notable like red blinking thing on his chest.
Yeah, I heard about that, and there is like a sound. It's making a sound that ramps up apparently as they close in on the corpse.
I mean, got his robot Toto. That could come collect his body and back to tank it or whatever.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Me neither.
Really? You watch Clone Wars? It's his little...
A Robo Toto?
His name is Toto, like T-O-T-O.
Like the dog Toto and Wizard of Oz?
Little bit.
Yeah.
Weird.
He's a very kind of...
May be right. They didn't kill him off, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
I think
honestly, you need a cooler death, so...
Yeah. Yep.
I thought it was a fine death.
And then there's a Blade Runner 2099 series in development at Amazon, which is 50 years past Blade Runner 2049. Mm-hmm. I think Nick and I are probably both intrigued by this.
Yeah, I like the Blade Runner universe. We'll see what they do.
Blade Runner 2049.
I really enjoy it.
Here's the thing. I really liked it. I couldn't tell you what happens in it. I really probably need to rewatch it because I really enjoyed it, and I do not remember a single thing of what happened in that movie.
Really? Yeah.
I didn't particularly enjoy it when I saw it, and then I did a revisit about a year ago, and I didn't particularly enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I've
it was
that's that Denis Villeneuve for you.
It was the replicant human baby hybrid thing.
That's Alien. That's Alien Covenant, right? Alien
Resurrection. No. This is like a replicant actually having. A child.
Was it a half baby, half alien, half predator baby?
No.
The only Blade Runner thing I've liked has been the comic did, which seemed to, I don't know, it asked more interesting questions to me than the questions that stuff they were asking in Blade Runner 2049.
I liked it, but I don't know that I'm like super psyched for a return. But I'm curious. I mean, I like a cyberpunky type world. I'm good with it.
Favorite Denis Villeneuve movie.
All right, that's it for news. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about comics for the week. We're talking about comics for the week of Wednesday, February 16th.
Comics are on time this week.
Comics are on time. We have everything.
Look at them.
Not a lot of new stuff this week, but there are a couple favorites in there. But one of the new ones is the G.I. Joe Saturday Morning Adventures, which is a little 4-issue miniseries they're doing, I think.
It's unique from all the other G.I. Joe comics that have come out, which are all some stripe of the slightly more realistic comic fare. They've had different continuities, but they're always kind of on the more realistic side. This is the cartoon style.
Yes.
This is the kind that had the blue and the red lasers, that had Knowing is Half the Battle, that had magic and things that would happen, and indeed, it has an outrageous premise. Randy, what's the premise?
So the premise, which is stated in the very, third page, is that Zartan of the Dreadnoughts have recovered an artifact for Cobra Commander that he's been seeking. That artifact is, as Destro says in Surprise, the Lamp of Aladdin!
Which I love because it was like he saw it and knew it. He's like, I've seen pictures of this. That's definitely it.
So page 4 has Cobra Commander summoning a genie.
Yes. Yeah,
again, not spoiling anything. Page 4, summoning a genie.
We should just to cut in real quick, I think we all like this.
Yes. Oh, it's super fun. I thought this was just going to be dumb and maybe hard to... Maybe just cringy. It's super fun.
It honestly feels like an episode of the cartoon.
It does.
It feels... Just slightly self-aware, though.
Yeah, I love that.
Not self-aware.
There is a pretty spectacular knowing is half the battle at the end of it.
There is. It's really good.
But I will just also say, sometimes the cartoon was pretty darn good.
Okay. also, Bazooka...
Won't Steve stop you from talking?
Bazooka in here, I think he has two lines, and those lines are boom and big robot.
In context, they're great.
We think it's possible that Bazooka might be stoned.
This has the Roadblock, who Roadblock speaks rhymes. In rhyme.
Yep.
Everybody can fly a Sky Striker.
And does.
Yep. I don't want to say what the threat is, but I was delighted with it.
Yep. Yeah.
It's a very G.I. Joe... It is Cobra as, like, super villain kind of thing.
Right, the truly heightened kind of ridiculous thing of the cartoon.
Anyway, surprisingly fun. My fondness for this is very much in the comics, not the cartoon.
Yeah.
But this was a delight.
Yeah, it seemed to capture, what I sort of remembered being both kind of cool about the cartoon and silly about it, but in just the right way.
Marvel's number one this week. There's a new Iron Fist in town. And it made it sound like
that was the title. It's a long title.
There's a previous character who is now Iron Fist, which I thought was interesting.
Danny is going to play some mentor role.
Danny gave up his powers to save the world somehow in, I guess, maybe Aaron's Avengers.
Okay.
And now he has a run-in with this new person who has somehow gotten the Iron Fist powers. And there's this is basically setting up the new Iron Fist.
Okay.
We will see if this is a something it takes or not.
Right. Always a question.
Nightwing this week comes out and is the first part of a crossover with the Superman Son of Kal-El, which we really like. Tom Taylor writes both.
Yep.
There's just so many good moments. It'd be impossible to talk about them all. We all love Nightwing. I believe it is the best comic being published right now, and it continues to be really great.
Agreed.
I don't know about the best comic being published right now, but it's good. It's very good.
No, it's not a better one.
And it is another one that, by the way, that the whole store agrees upon.
Yeah, we all like it.
Yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man is another issue. That's the Goblin Queen. They're bringing Pete back into action in really, really interesting ways. Second issue of Joe Hill's Reign, which I really liked.
What is Reign about?
So Reign is... I think we missed this week, because I think it was like during a week we were off.
Oh, okay, yeah.
This is Joe Hill's Reign, so it's written by Joe Hill, although the comic is not.
And that is, since there's so many different words, that's not like the Reign of a King, it's like Reign that pours down from the clouds. Yep.
Because this is based on one of his novellas.
It's like the metal shards and stuff that come raining down.
They're like glass shards that rain. And they rain down unpredictably and kill like thousands of people. And so this is about a girl who was in the first storm. She saw her girlfriend die, and this is about her sort of trying to figure out how to live in this sort of post-apocalyptic where glass rain falls from the sky and seems to be spreading. It's a character study. It's got another character introduced. It's really, really good. It's
adaptation of a book?
Adaptation of a novella, yes.
Okay.
I really like the first issue, and the second issue was just as strong. So
nice.
New issues of Donny Cates' Thor and Al Ewing's Venom. And worth mentioning that the Moon Knight trade by Jed McKay gets its first collection this week and is really good. Also, the epic collection for Moon Knight, the finale of the St. Kavik's Moon Knights, is reprinted this week, so we're starting to get some more Moon Knight trades back.
Yeah, right. Am I right that at the moment it's that third volume is the only collection?
It's the only one available right now, but they are putting them all back in.
Yeah, so if you want to check out some of the early Moon Knight stuff, which was really pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's and has like stunning artwork.
Yep,
definitely recommend.
There's also
you won't have long to wait.
It didn't come out this week, but it was previous week. I don't know if we talked about it, but the Moon Knight by Bendis and Maliev, where he like thinks he has all the different superpowers.
Right, he's got the different personalities as Spider-Man and Wolverine and stuff like that.
That one is also available. So they're starting to get Moon Knight back in print, just in time for Weird Voice Stephen Grant.
Yep.
Dave, what else? What did I miss?
I just wanted to mention, Batman the Knight. That's the 10-issue Chip Zdarsky miniseries that's on issue 2 now that flashes back to his training. The first issue had a thing I liked where young Bruce Wayne, while trying to overcome his like grief and anger and stuff like that, sees Hugo Strange, and I thought it was a cool new riff on his his origin and the sort of training time for him. Mm-hmm. This one takes him to Paris, where he meets up with a cat thief who's like Catwoman in certain ways, but also quite unlike her in other ways, aside from being, she's like a older sort of cat burglar who's, you know, like late 40s, could be 50s, but who's like clearly like trying to, she's looking to, I think, get out of the game and is maybe down to teach him some stuff because he does not have the skill sets he needs yet. And there's some good Zdarsky character interactions between them. I wasn't as big on this issue as I was on the first one, but I'm going to continue reading it and see where he's taking it. Did you mention the Garth Ennis thing?
I did not.
Garth Ennis has another war story. This is a World War II story about British movements in India, or at least that's how it starts. But it deals with like battling against the Japanese. I think there's a Chinese consultant in there, so it's a very sort of multinational sort of group that he's got together. And just flipping through it, it seemed to be his mixture of like. It had his mixture of cynicism and realism and moments of heroism and strange, unusual camaraderie between people who aren't always working together. Looked like a pretty good Garth Ennis war story. I just didn't get around to reading it.
As always, right. He's working with a really good artist.
Yeah, he pretty much has his pick of it, and then these artists are always really good. And they're good at doing war stories. Sure. Like, these guys do their research. There's lots of, I noticed there was a really beautiful splash page of like some of the aircraft that they were assembling for it, and I was like, this dude has done his reference.
Yep.
Recommended if you are a fan of any of the Garth Ennis war story type stuffs.
Nick, anything else?
No, you guys got it all.
Alright, that's comics. We're going to be back in just a minute to talk about some TV and stuff. All right, Nick had talked about Reacher already.
Yes.
And I finally got around to watching it.
It's on Amazon Prime.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Yep. In fact, I hear it's quite a hit on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, well, they've already given us season two. I really liked this. I thought it was very fun. It's meathead action in a lot of ways. Like, it's not like... I compare it to something like CSI and the other procedural stuff that I like. It's definitely not like prestige TV.
I think it's a little better than... the procedurals because the fight choreography and
I guess I found the story pretty easy to untangle.
Yeah.
Like they hit that animal feed thing real hard. Like they definitely wanted to be like, we want to make sure you get what we're saying. And I feel like there's a lot of that. They're definitely aiming this to people who like, I like big strong men who punch things. Like I feel like the story lacks some sophistication. It reminded me of some of Greg Rucka's novels.
Yeah.
Which I think have been described maybe uncharitably as like airport novels. And that's what Reacher felt like to me as watching it. I'm like,
completely.
I'm like, this is a sort of...
Those are airplane novels.
Those are airplane beach reads.
Yeah. And it was fun. It did what it should do. It wasn't trying to be any more or less. The lead guy's great. Two other detectives, the detective and the cop who are his friends... are really good. I thought that they did a nice job with the... Basically, a lot of what works here is you want this guy to just be, like, uber-confident badass, and he is.
He is.
And so I think it really works on that level.
It's winning a lot of people over.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen some people who I didn't think would enjoy it, and... Like, I didn't know if you would like it, honestly.
I wasn't sure that I was going
to
like it either.
It is retro in the sense of, like, you know, that kind of, like, a callback to... He feels like it could be an 80s action hero.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But based more around mystery. Like, he's an action hero, but, like, is there a ton of action in it?
There's a ton of action.
Yeah. Okay, I wasn't sure how much...
He's very physical.
He was mostly being interrogated in just the scenes and stuff that I watched in.
No, there's lots of big throwdowns and gunfights.
There is something in it, you know, maybe... Like, I get the appeal, and I'm not even particularly critical of it... Of like watching someone who is like righteous in his cause and knows it and is like cannot be intimidated.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool to see a dude like that just like whoop up on people.
There's certain instances where I would love to do this to a bunch of people.
Well, it feels like a modern.
We know
day,
how you feel about our customers, Nick.
It feels like a modern day A-Team, Equalizer, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Right. And then the same with that. I don't know if you've seen any of Queen Latifah's Equalizer.
Yeah,
I've
watched most of
that. That's super fun.
It is.
It's the same way as this. It's like, it's occasionally I'm watching this and I'm like, This is making me dumber watching it, but it is really enjoyable.
Randy, what level of right wing and or fascism? Where does it chart on the scale?
It's higher than I'd like, but it is definitely not sort of. It's not propaganda because the cops are all corrupt except for the ones he's working with.
Say, the government and the cops of this town are the corrupt ones.
This is definitely more of that the outsider who steps outside the system to make it all work.
Is the whole first season what would be one book?
Yes.
And is the first season done?
Yes.
How many episodes?
Eight.
Ten.
I thought it was eight.
I don't know. Eight or ten.
I think it's eight.
Choose a number, fellas.
I go with eight.
I guess it was nine.
I'm just curious. All right, so it's not like you're not getting multiple mysteries. It's one season, big mystery.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, it's enjoyable. I'm glad they're doing a season two. To be honest, most of what I was thinking was, man, I wish they'd adapt the Atticus Kodiak books. Because I really liked that, and I would like to see it. I think Rucka turned down some deals on that. I think he was sort of protective of it. Like, he would never adapt it to comics. But I'm like, man, it would work in TV, and I would kind of like to see it.
Yeah. I mean, that's why, like, Bosch worked, and a couple of other...
But are we ready for a man named Atticus Kodiak, or will people be laughing too
I'm
much?
I'm ready for Atticus Kodiak.
I mean, what isn't Bosch's name? Isn't it based off the painter? Isn't it Hieronymus Bosch?
Be. I don't know. I watched the first episode and I was bored. So
I like that actor.
Yeah, I like that actor too, but I couldn't get into the show. let's talk about the other thing. I think Nick and I, you and I talked about this already, but Dave has jumped on board Pam and Tommy.
Yeah, and I'm one episode ahead of where you are, Nick, so I don't want to accidentally spoil anything, but I'm really enjoying it.
You're all about that Jason Manzuka's penis?
All about it. Actually, there's some dramatic turns in the latest episode that made it, I think, the best episode, maybe, to date.
Oh, very cool.
And there's a... it's not that it doesn't still have the same craziness, but... Yeah, so just having come into it based on y'all's recommendation, this is a movie that or a show that like will you know it starts out in the feet of the carpenter done wrong by Tommy Lee, and like Tommy Lee is just so obnoxious. He withholds his money, he keeps the guy's toolbox, and it's all because he's such a narcissistic, egotistical asshole.
I feel bad for both of the carpenters. Like,
they get absolutely hosed. So that the initial theft of a safe, which starts out just trying to, literally just a robbery.
Yeah.
And does function as such. There's, like, money and stuff in there. But also, he ends up getting his weird collection of guns and the sex tape.
Isn't that like a...
it's like a nickel-plated...
AK,
yeah, 47. And he's got an AK-47 and all this stuff. As we're getting around to these later episodes, and you're starting to see, I think what you haven't seen yet is like the sort of the impact it has on sort of the more innocent party in this, probably Pamela Anderson, who was not this person, and who's a little shocked and doesn't quite realize what this is going to become. Which, you know, basically this amounts to what? Revenge porn. Mm-hmm. That's a term that we have now because people will post like sex tapes and stuff like that. Of exes that they're pissed at, and this it didn't like that was not like his intent. He's like mostly just wanting to get revenge on Tommy Lee and get some money. But it effectively is that.
I was deeply amused that in one of the scenes, it was her meeting with a agent doing press tour for barbed wire.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, you're about to become a big star. Barbed wire.
I was
hilarious. Don't put all your chips on that bet yet. Every episode has like lots of laugh out loud scenes, and who's the guy who plays the sleazy porn producer?
That's Nick Offerman.
Yeah, Nick Offerman's great in it. Nick, I'm excited to hear what you think of this episode when you get to it because it does have some other dramatic turns in it. And I don't know who the actress is playing Pamela.
That is
Baby Driver.
Is that her name?
Or
Lily James.
Lily James. Yeah.
She's actually doing a great job of playing a particular brand of sort of. Well-intentioned airhead.
Yeah.
And Seth Rogen's ex is from Orange is the New Black.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can see that.
There's good stuff going on it. It is also, like, I want to mention it has, like, an ongoing great soundtrack. Every episode has lots of inspired music.
Yep.
Some of it's pop from the 90s, you know, and like, punk pop and other stuff. And some of it, they'll like, pull, like, some classics or some old Sinatra-sounding tune or whatever. It continues to bounce around between both, basically, the guy who swiped the tape and his friends and circle of people... and Pam and Tommy as a unusual romance, which by the third and fourth episodes, you get to see, like, as, like, kind of awful as he is and kind of maybe, I guess, ditzy as she is, that they are this kind of weirdly good fit that sort of back each other pretty well. And then it becomes, you're like, oh, this isn't as kind of like as light and fun suddenly now as it seemed before, but it's an interesting transition.
Sebastian Stan is killing it.
He's fantastic.
Ridiculously good. This is playing an asshole.
This show is way better than I thought it was going to be.
I hope it continues to go do well and end strong.
I watched Star Trek Prodigy because Dave was talking about it.
Yeah, I talked about that the other week. It's their animated one that they kind of in partnership with Nickelodeon.
Yeah,
that's about the kids who get a starship.
It feels very Nickelodeon. It definitely feels a little younger.
Yep.
But Nickelodeon did do Avatar, so they can sometimes deliver on that stuff. I didn't love the first two episodes, and I was like, okay, I don't know that I really like. I don't like most of the kids. None of the kids made much of an impression on me. And so as I watched it, the thing that made Prodigy work for me is as it goes on, there's more from Hollow Janeway.
Yep. Including a cool slight change up in Janeway a little ways in.
But they and honestly, much as I love Jason Mantzoukas, his guy who says his full name every time,
Jenkin Pog,
gets on my nerves more than not. I like the sweet rock girl. Mm-hmm. I like the evil daughter, but I guess I didn't quite plug into the cast as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But they do a good job of like making them. I'm like, I see all their story arcs.
Yep.
And I liked the way they come together a little bit, and mostly like the ship is cool.
Yep.
Some of the worlds they go to and the ideas there are cool, and the basic exploration of this like this cool ship with a star that inside of it and Starfleet technology and how it ties into some of the Voyager characters. I'm interested in seeing where that goes.
Yeah, then they've introduced this subplot, which is sort of another ship seeking for them in the finale.
Yeah.
You know, I actually came around a little bit on Jenkin Pog, although he is like sort of the obnoxious one. He's the one who would be like, "I'm the party dude."
Yeah.
He's
the party
dude. You know, in the last in that last episode. That sort of robotic arm he got, he started like, I felt like he was a player who had like started, who had put some points into combos with it, because he actually starts kicking some ass with it, and I was like, oh, is he going to end up the security officer, and the big rock girl, is she going to end up the engineer?
Yeah, that's possible.
But he kind of was for sure the engineer guy. My co-podcasters in Tech Trek think that she's basically science officer and he will remain engineer.
That makes sense.
He did do some beating up, and I was pleased to see that finally the Cation, the little kitty that was taken to the slave mines, like they're the humanoid cat race, finally got their moment in the sun too.
Yeah. There's a very Star Trek notion of the universal translator is what will bring together labor.
That was a surprise use. They've been every few episodes they kind of like key in on some other bit of technology, like the transporter, or we're going to use phasers, or we're going to find out what sometimes an idea like the prime directive is.
Yeah.
But it actually ends up being sort of the least thought about of Trek technology, the universal translator, that's super key to things in the final episodes, including the unusual love between two male miners who'd been... working for alongside each other for years.
They hate each other.
And well, I think they wanted to confess their love, but didn't know how. It was more like they couldn't communicate until they got that.
I also like they got the Star Trek uniforms. I think their uniforms look good.
Yeah, when they did that, that was very cool. I got for our podcast, my buddy Father, who produces it too. Commissioned a piece of art for me, him, and all our basically five people who are all kind of associated with Tech Trek, so to varying levels, as Trek characters, and we got to pick out our uniforms. And I decided last minute to go into one of the Prodigy uniforms.
That's a weird call. It's
They were new though, and I like the look.
I see.
I think they look very cool. They're actually more like cadet uniforms. Janeway has had a version of them that had like her command color on it.
Yeah.
And theirs don't. But that's okay. I can be a cadet.
None of y'all went with the Discovery version uniforms, right?
No. Interestingly, no. Yeah. I think we ended up more spread out. initially Fothery wanted to kind of hit the uniforms from the current shows, so like Picard and stuff like that. But there's such a fun breadth of uniforms over the years that we ended up, everything from Star Trek the Motion Picture to sort of Voyager Deep Space Nine era, and it had a pretty wide variety.
Yeah. Finally, Dave, I think you were talking about Stagecoach.
Yeah, I watched two movies recently. One was the insane Maximum Overdrive, which I do want to say is a good margarita time movie. You can watch the movie both written and directed by Coke-fueled Stephen King at his most Coke-fueled.
Cheer on Emilio Estevez.
Cheer on Emilio Estevez as he takes on a an 18-wheeler with a Green Goblin head.
Yeah.
on the cab.
Isn't it open with like a toaster or something? Or
something does unusual does kill somebody. What is it?
I thought it was a toaster.
It could be. All the machines turn on people in that movie.
Yeah.
And what nobody had told me over the years though is that it has a soundtrack by AC/DC.
Yeah. That's true.
This movie is like just the most ridiculous and doofy movie ever. But that's not what I came here to talk about. I just had to mention it.
Yep.
I do think Maximum Overdrive was kind of fun. In the midst of it are some fun ideas, and it made me want to reread the original short story that it was based on. But the actual super legit movie that I saw recently was the 1939 Western Stagecoach by John Ford. And if you know John Ford, he's one of those legends of sort of Western movies. I'm trying to think, what did he make? I'm looking it up here. He did, at the very least, he did Grapes of Wrath back when. Like, he's a makes Oscar movie, award-winning movies kind of movie. Let's see, Grapes of Wrath, My Darling Clementine, oh, that's really good. That's one of those variations on, what do you call it? Tombstone is the same story. It's, what do you call that one? Okay, Crow. Mm-hmm. The Searchers, Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. He did some of the best westerns.
Quiet Man. Bosemy Valley.
Anyway, so Stagecoach has a super awesome and simple premise, which is that it's, a bunch of very different passengers are about to take a journey through sort of Comanche territory that they need to do in a hurry. And they all have very different reasons for going, and they're all sort of stuck in the same place. And they all bounce off of each other in super interesting ways. It's a crowd pleaser that I think is actually on the order of Casablanca or even Die Hard and things like that.
Okay.
So here's what you've got in there. You've got a, I think there's a sheriff type. There's a sort of well-to-do lady who's going to visit her husband at a fort that where he might have taken an injury, sort of like fighting Indians. Mm-hmm. There's a banker who's absconding with a cash box of money that nobody knows about. But he is also a very sort of self-righteous guy who... if you want to see a corrupt businessman who's super narcissistic and into himself, that feels like a prediction of the future, this guy could be him. There's a prostitute who's been driven out of town, and there's also a gambler who's super cool looking. He looks like Lee Van Cleef in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. They can hold like six people or like three people on a side and sort of a dude in the middle. It gets a little crowded.
Interesting. Okay.
There's a gambler who fancies himself a gentleman, but he's kind of a bit of a sleazeball too. But he seems to have designs on the well-to-do lady.
Okay.
And then there's an alcoholic doctor, also driven out of town by like sort of like a it's like a morality, you know, like a temperance league kind of thing.
Dave, this sounds like an indie RPG session where the DM was like, okay, I need everybody to give me what your character is and why they're on this stage.
Right, and it's like, well, does that all fit together? It doesn't matter.
Don't worry about it.
But it is like, you know, you see in movies like where... I'm trying to think of something, like the only thing I can think of right now is something like Hitchcock's Lifeboat or something like that, but... people from all, or even the bus in Speed.
Okay.
It's a bunch of different people.
I happened to just rewatch Speed last night.
Bunch of different people from varying walks of life forced into that situation. I actually am sure that Stagecoach would have come up in the discussion of Speed. There's also the guy who drives the Stagecoach is almost like a fun character actor who's got kind of a, I'm going to say a slightly perpetually cracking voice, and is the source of a lot of comic relief. but he kind of knows everybody, and he has a bigger part than your average sort of side character.
Okay.
But anyway, also along the way, they meet a John Wayne playing an outlaw who they know has escaped and they're on the watch for, and who's going to be heading to the same place as them because he wants to get revenge on the people who put him away.
Okay.
And this is actually John Wayne, who's like, I'm not a John Wayne guy in particular, but I've seen him in some good movies before.
Yep.
And this is one of them. He is pre-star John Wayne. He's actually a little bit vulnerable in this. He's a sort of more thoughtful outlaw who takes to sort of being the guy who stands up for the prostitute. He's clearly got some feelings for her, and when everybody else is kind of snubbing her, like when they're passing the water around or something like that, he's like, hey, some for the lady over here. And so he ends up being a sort of more... less John Wayne. He doesn't always have to be the hero in every scene or a badass.
That's good. It's nice to see a stretch there.
Yeah. But, you know, it goes to places I didn't expect it to. It's sort of a little... a lot of times it's kind of character actor, kind of there's lots of fun stuff going on and funny moments. Then sometimes it's surprisingly tense, and sometimes it's sad, and there's like... It feels like a movie that has a little bit of everything in it in a good way. Not like, oh, it's just all over the map.
Is this super long? It feels like
it was short. It was short. It was like an hour and 40 minutes.
Okay.
And it has a one of those endings that I was like, that was a great ending. I love that.
Black and white?
Black and white. Same. It came out the same year as Wizard of Oz, wow. Which is crazy to think of. But yeah, 1939... when you get back to the 30s, like, you're getting, you know, like, far enough back that I'm like, I don't know that I'm really going to, like, be into too many movies from the 30s.
Right.
Although I've watched black and white movies from the 20s that I've liked. But this one I felt is one that sort of holds up and has some progressive messages in it. The two of the better people in it are the prostitute and the alcoholic doctor. And like much is made of the fact that they are undervalued by this by many of the people that they're traveling with. There's a really tense scene. I guess I don't want to quite say what it is, just in case one of y'all happen to catch it. But involves the doctor having to sober up real quick. Anyway, yeah, Stagecoach is like it's like a 5-star movie. That's all there is to it.
Okay. That's it for us this week, and we'll be back next time with more. Until that time,
yo show.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.